Thank you, and good morning. First, I'd like to say what an honor it is to be here and to thank the committee for inviting me down here. I'm a consultant. My name is Bill Rosenblatt. I'm president of Giant Steps Media Technology Strategies based in New York. I'm a consultant on digital rights technologies, among other things. I wrote a book on DRM, which is now, I think, ancient history. And I've worked with clients from across the spectrum of these issues for many years. I'm very happy to see this research being done. I think it's there's a real need for it. And so as a consultant, I try not to take sides, but I will say, as a personal, perhaps a personal bias that I have, is that I was raised by professional musicians. So I'm in favor of content creators being able to make a living. By training, I'm a computer scientist, but I'm also an author and editor, and I'm someone who's worked in both the content and technology industries. In fact, like the chairman this morning, I'm an alum of Sun Microsystems. So I noted that the prospectus for this workshop says that the debates over digital copyright have been philosophical and emotional rather than economic or fact-based, and I was really happy to see this because this is really what I see as well. And this morning I'd like to draw attention to two particular areas that I've focused on and that I believe are particularly in need of objective research. Number one is the economic imbalance that I see between demands for rights technologies and the costs of implementing them. And number two is something that I'll explain, which I call the trapdoor between laws and technologies. And for each of these, I'll describe the problems that I believe can be addressed by appropriate research. The first one, the economic imbalance. Copyright owners demand that downstream entities in the content value chain, such as distributors, retailers, and consumer electronics makers, implement digital rights technologies in order to get licenses to content. But in general, the downstream entities are the ones that pay for those technologies. The content owners don't. This has led to two common outcomes, both of which are not optimal. First, downstream entities implement the cheapest and simplest rights technologies that they can get away with. Or, secondly, in many cases, they implement technologies that benefit them at least as much as they benefit the content owners. One example of the first outcome is the CSS technology for protecting DVDs, which was, in my view, designed primarily to be cheap to implement rather than to actually protect content well. It was hacked in a matter of weeks after its release. The hack was applicable to all protected DVDs worldwide, and it was very easy to use. An example of the second outcome, which is the platform lock-in outcome, or rather the benefit to the downstream entity outcome, is in fact platform lock-in, an example of which is Apple's Fairplay DRM, which was designed to promote platform lock-in as much as it was designed to protect content. And these are just examples. I don't mean to finger any particular companies or technologies. There are plenty of other examples. No one really knows how to fix this economic imbalance because nobody actually understands the value of these technologies to content owners, to retailers, to device makers, or to consumers. Various studies have been done on related subjects, such as the loss to content industries from copyright infringement, the effect of DRM on content pricing to consumers, contributions that fair use has made to the gross domestic product was one study, and so forth. So we have to ask, how helpful have these studies been? Well, the Government Accountability Office released a report this past April that not only cast doubt on their validity, but expressed skepticism that the economic impact of IP infringement can be measured at all with any kind of accuracy. And I had seen some of the studies mentioned in the GAO report. It also included a lot of stuff on counterfeit goods, which is not my area. But I had seen some of these studies and also felt that their methodologies and objectivity left much to be desired. And I'm not the only one who sees this imbalance. A couple of years ago, Professor Jonathan Zittrain of Harvard Law School said at a conference that the key issue in Viacom's copyright litigation against Google for YouTube was the cost and responsibility of implementing copyright filter technologies. Litigations such as that one and similar ones like Universal Music Group versus Veo are really attempts to obtain or rebuff technological mandates so that the government decides or doesn't decide who has to pay for what technology. There may well be legal and philosophical principles that guide such decisions, but there are economic ones as well, and these go largely unexplored, hence the opportunity for research. And despite the GAO report's pessimism, I believe that if the questions are posed carefully and the research is done well and objectively, we can get answers to some of these questions. And just as a couple example questions, one is, how much better is a content protection system that costs more to implement in terms of security as well as the consumer experience? How do you measure that? Another one might be, what are the differences in cost effectiveness and user experience between proactive and reactive technologies for copyright? An example of proactive would be DRM, and an example of reactive would be forensic watermarking, for example. Another one might be, what is the economic consideration, or as some have put it this morning, incentive that might be appropriate for network operators to be accountable for their users' copyright infringements through means such as filtering technologies or legal initiatives such as progressive response legislation? Those are just some examples of questions that could be addressed that would answer the question, how much is this stuff worth anyway? And that's the economic imbalance issue. The second issue that I want to mention is what I call the trapdoor between laws and technologies. So it's the digital age, and everything about digital content is automated and instantaneous. Copying, distribution, storage, searching, browsing, playback, etc. Everything that is, except decisions about copyright infringement. You can do whatever you want with content, but in a large and growing number of cases, you have to call lawyers in to decide questions of legality, or as Larry Lessig once said, fair use is the right to hire a lawyer. I prefer to say that fair use, just as one example, is a trapdoor into the legal system. Whenever you get to a copyright gray area, you fall through the trapdoor, and you have to stop doing what you're doing. The problem is not just that people have to hire lawyers and embark on potentially long proceedings. It's also that consumers, and especially entrepreneurs, we're talking about innovation today, tend to shy away from activity that they're unaware of the legality of because of the fear of going through that legal process just to get the questions decided. And my view is that this trap door is itself a chill on expression and innovation. It's as if you were driving and the speed limits weren't posted and you had to guess how fast you could drive based on the width of the road, the type of the road surface, whether pedestrians are around, and so forth. And if you weren't sure, you could pay a traffic lawyer to go spend a year figuring it out for you. And all so that you could drive to the mall one afternoon, or, as Google apparently just did, invent a new type of self-driving car. Now, wouldn't it be easier if we had a copyright legal system that enabled at least some degree of automation of decisions on fair use and other issues? Well, apparently not, according to many lawyers, including Fritz Attaway. And when I raised this possibility on a panel at my last conference back in June, the attorneys on the panel, who represented a cross-section of copyright interests, reacted with a mixture of bemusement and annoyance. But my view is that this step is unavoidable, given the realities of the digital age. And in fact, like it or not, our legal system does introduce rule-based judgments about appropriate use. For example, the Copyright Office's triennial rulemaking on DMCA 1201, which produces a list of legally permitted uses. And of course, these are very constrained and not of much, one could argue that they don't have much practical value. But still, they're there. And the problem, once again, is that arguments are being made on philosophical or emotional rather than fact-based, or I would even say reality-based grounds. People say that fair use should not be made more automatable because business models and technologies change too rapidly, and it's the flexibility that gives the law its staying power. And that may well be true, but to me, just to say that is a cop-out. The issue has just not been explored properly. It may well be that our principle-based fair use system is better in some sense than, for example, the European system or some other type of copyright regime, but we just don't really know one way or another. And by the way, I'm not trying to single out fair use. Professor Yahtzee talked about Section 109, and it would apply to first sale as well. So a nonprofit organization called the Digital Media Project tried to solve this problem several years ago. This is an organization that was created by Leonardo Chiarilione, who was the founder of MPEG, the MPEG standards body. They tried to do something that could have been great if only they had finished the job. What they did primarily was to create an open standard DRM technology. One of its design goals was that this technology should support what they call traditional rights and usages, or TRUs, which would vary from one country to another depending on copyright laws. And from what I can tell from reading their documents, the DMP made some progress on mapping TRUs to digitally expressible and automatable constructs, but it essentially abandoned the effort 3 years ago. Someone ought to try to continue the work that they started, though with a different goal, not necessarily to try to shoehorn existing copyright constructs into a DRM system, but just to see how far it could reasonably go. They identified the TRUs. There's a list of them. You can find it. They just did not map them. They didn't finish the mapping. They just stopped with a few examples. So right now, my view is that, notwithstanding the DMCA 1201 rulemaking, the rules about appropriate use arise primarily from a very ad hoc combination of settled case law precedents, such as parody or criticism being fair use, and industry conventions, such as discussed this morning regarding the music industry sampling and so forth. Research could be done to explore both the boundaries of how current copyright law could be made more amenable to technological implementation and the pros and cons of changing copyright law so as to make the trapdoor smaller, if not go away altogether. So those are the two sets of issues in copyright that I believe would benefit from the research that the committee is contemplating. Thanks very much for your attention. I look forward to asking your questions, and thanks once again for the invitation to come down.
You mentioned that it would be useful to have research evaluating the costs and benefits for various technologies for encouraging authorized use. Could you point us, maybe not today, but point us to contexts where various different things have been tried? So there might be an historical record that can be analyzed to see effects on...
When you say things have been tried, you mean studies?
No, I mean actual implemented policies. You know, like are there contexts where ISPs have done various things or contexts where different things have actually been implemented?
Well, for example...
Studies would also be good.
Well, there have been studies, and as I just said, none of the ones that I've read have been very convincing. I think there's going to be some data coming out of countries that have implemented progressive response legislation or arrived at progressive response through litigation, such as in Belgium. And it's interesting because just because there's a law doesn't mean that you have an actual mechanism for doing that. Mechanisms will need time to develop because the onus is still on the rights holder to complain about infringement or alleged infringement. But I think there are a few countries that you could look at. France is the most prominent example. I think New Zealand, it's either one of the Asia-Pac countries, South Korea or Taiwan, has implemented this type of law. And there could be some research done into their findings on whether what technologies they've used, how effective were they, and so forth. That would be the low-hanging fruit that I could point to at this moment. Thank you very much.